Before we get into this week's episode of Watch Less, there's no way we could have a conversation about anything without addressing, I guess, one of the hardest pieces of news to come out in 2020. Over the weekend, it was announced that Chadwick Boseman, star of Black Panther, 42, Get On Up, and a number of other projects, passed away at the age of 43 due to colon cancer. He'd been battling colon cancer for 4 years. It's one of those things where, like, you know, when he passed, you think about, you know, you really start to think about how somebody's life unfolded. And the phrase that kept coming to my mind was just crowns for kings. Like, you know, this man is, when you talk about Black actors and representation and who is being represented on film, it's crazy to think that he was not only a person who portrayed a fictional king in Black Panther as T'Challa, but to literally play people like James Brown, Jackie Robinson. Like, it's a really tough loss. It's a really tough loss, especially if you really fuck with this acting thing and, you know, just movies in general.
And just, you know, just from a life standpoint in general, like, it's 43, a secret illness, even his closest collaborators and, you know, didn't even know about. It's just a really, really cruel twist of the knife in what's been a cruel year already.
Yeah, it's to see the outpouring of support, not just from the fans who, you know, love saying things like Wakanda Forever, but, you know, the his peers and, you know, people he's worked with and collaborated with. I've never heard any bad thing about Chadwick, the person. No. It's insane to see how some of these videos hit, you know, not just your interview with Chadwick and Ryan Coogler.
I was going to say.
It was the week of release when you talked to them, right?
I think so. They were in heavy junket mode for sure. You know, I think I was like one stop on a million that day. But, you know, I think when this happens, there's always a rush to, like, for people to, like, post pictures. Or, you know, even link back, like, the night of, I saw people, like, post links to their interviews, which was, you know, I get it, but also a little weird. But I think just for me personally, in this case, not only was that, like, a top five interview for me just as a, you know, benchmark for what it represented, but they, you know, there's the clip that we always used to laugh about where they ask how old I am, but they, you know, made me feel really supported and were, like, genuinely proud to be being interviewed by, a young Black man such as myself. And it was definitely more of a connection than a normal, even in-person interview you would have with everyone. So, you know, I definitely connected with him and Ryan Coogler that day, and it's really crazy to think about.
Yeah. Again, even just thinking about just in its totality, the idea of the journey to creating Black Panther. I was working news at Complex, so I remember getting the report that Coogler was going to be, you know, directing, and, you know, we already had seen Chadwick in Civil War, I believe, or we had known that Chadwick was going to be in Civil War.
Something like that.
It was something like that. But
and you visited the set, right?
Yeah, I mean, I went to Wakanda. I was trying to think of the exact time. It was May of 2017, walking into the studio, the set, I mean, and hearing Black Beatles playing. I'm like, yo, this is different. And I mean, for people, I remember when it happened on screen, when I finally saw the film, but it was the scene I saw them do it like 30 times. It feels like it's the scene where Ross comes back and Shuri's checking out his vitals and everything, 'cause he had just gotten, you know, all injured or whatever. And we see T'Challa go up that windy staircase to go talk to Wakabi. Yep. They have their little, you know, they have their back and forth. And it was just like, damn, that man, he was in the suit. He wasn't doing crazy shit, but, like, my God, we're sitting there like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then I was going through the notes and he was talking about how, like, because one of the questions people asked was if he had a cooling system
in the suit.
And he was like, he said, usually when you have the suit on for a long time, you would put the cooling in it. But because he's working so fast, he's not in the suit like that, like, all the way crazy. But it just makes me think, like, he was even having to, like, do all of that, stand in shape, learn lines, all that stuff. And what he was battling, because he would have been a year and some change at that time, based off of when they're saying. So, you know, it's insane to think of how much effort and you know, dedication he put into that role, just that role, let alone everything else that he's done while battling, you know, an illness and going to hospitals. Like, I don't know, just like, I don't want to hear shit about anything but Chadwick being that guy. That's what a man should be, yeah, in society. So rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman. You know, shouts out to, you know, all the fans, his family. I believe I'd heard that he and his wife had gotten married before. I'm not sure how many posthumous releases there will be for Chadwick Boseman. It was immediately made clear that Netflix was going to be pushing back Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It was directed by George C. Wolfe. It was supposed to come out. There was supposed to be a preview event that got canceled, and I know they pushed it back. That's with Chadwick and Viola Davis. There is also a project about Yusuke, a 16th century warrior. They was reportedly attached to as well.
That sounds fire.
It sounds like, again, and,
like the, you know, black version of Last Samurai or some shit.
Big facts. No, big facts. And it kind of just rings true to the idea that, you know, you and I shared when we first heard the news, you know, that Chadwick Boseman, despite what anybody thought, he was just getting started. His trajectory, like his peak, he was looking up to his peak at this point.
And even just reading like the description of this, again, you know, quest for redemption and honor, like he had a really good knack that a lot of actors really struggle with at making, you know, decency and moral fortitude cool.
Right. I mean, and again, it just speaks to, because I feel like a lot of that is just him, you know, being able to, you've been in his presence. I got to sit at a round table, unfortunately wasn't able to do a face-to-face one-on-one, but being in his presence and hearing him speak, he wasn't a guy who just shot off at the mouth. You could tell he was conscious, and he was really trying to make sure that the words that came out of his mouth were the exact things he wanted to say. I don't think he wanted to put the shine on it. Like, he was just like a good dude, man. It sucks. Yeah. In a year that sucks, losing Chadwick Boseman is terrible. If you can get checked out, I've been reading people saying that colon cancer is it's not easy to get checked out, especially if you're under 40. But if you can, and especially guys, and, you know, frankly, especially black guys, you know, there are, you know, stereotypes and stigmas out there about, you know, black health and everything like that. So take your ass to the doctor if you haven't been there in a bit. I got to make an appointment myself. You know what I'm saying? You got to make sure that you're in tip top shape, or at the very least, you know what's out there and you can, you know, attack it that way. But I don't want to, you know, drag on about, you know, this terrible situation, this tragic situation. But yeah, rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman. We'll get into this episode, which was recorded prior to us finding out that news. Welcome back to Watch Less, Complex's podcast about movie and TV culture. This is your boy Cal, deputy editor of Complex's Pop Culture Channel. As always, the summer man Frazier Tharp is in the building.
Yes, sir.
Frazier, how are you doing, sir?
You know, I can't see Tenet with Tom Cruise, so.
You would have went, right? You would have been first on that bus, huh?
Listen, if I'm pulling out with Tom Cruise, you know they already swept the theater. They put the antiviral mist in the theater before he pulled up.
Wait, what? Is he just a fan of Nolan? Like, how does that happen?
Tom Cruise is a hardcore, just like cinephile shit. I don't know if you remember this. He and what's his man, Christopher McQuarrie, who is a famous screenwriter, and he's the guy who's directed the last two Mission Impossibles.
Word.
They linked up randomly. It was like on the Top Gun set, Top Gun 2, to shoot a super random PSA about like the dangers of motion smoothing, like that setting that comes on all the brand new TVs. That, you know, like, yeah, I'm sure we've all like turned that off for family members and shit,
right?
The soap
right.
opera thing, but they did like a 1 minute PSA, super random once, like turn the setting off, it ruins the movie. So he strikes me like, it's no surprise that he's on Christopher Nolan's wave of wanting to see the theater industry come back in a big way. So,
right,
you know, yeah, I think whatever film was first up in the line, he would have supported. Well, I think that just means, do we need to see Tom Cruise and a Christopher Nolan link up?
I'm set like that. Well, that's what I'm trying to understand. Like, I know the Mission movies aren't Warner Brothers. So, you know, I was trying to see if there was some type of, like, you know, we're under the same umbrella situation. But maybe this is really him saying, Christopher Nolan, come fucks with your boy. If you're really trying to do this action shit, Nolan and Tom Cruise in the film, the fuck? I'm watching that tomorrow. But we're not, Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that a point I think Nolan has kind of moved, like, they're two ships passing. Like, they're both too big to fuck with each other. But at the same, you know, he did have Leo in Inception, so.
Right. I mean, it would have to be the most, like, the most monumental shit ever for your mans to do that. You know what I'm saying?
That's like Frasier fanfic right there, Tom Cruise and Nolan.
Yeah, you might spontaneously combust as the, you know, the credits start rolling or what have you. But again, we're not here to talk about Tenet at all this week. This week we want to, we are on a, it's an interesting time if you're an X-Men fan. The New Mutants is out for some reason. I don't know if anybody cares. I don't know if the people putting it out even care, but we'll get into that discourse and the future of the X-Men franchise after this quick break. Welcome back. It's X-Men time, although it's reluctant because what even is the X-Men currently? I know we talked about the Iceman rumors with Shia LaBeouf recently on the podcast, and the comments were hot. The comments were hot on Instagram. They want Wolverine.
They want Shia as Wolverine, or they want Wolverine news?
I think either or. I think they want to know what's going to be going on with Wolverine under Disney, but a lot of people were saying instead of Iceman, why not just make Shia the new Wolverine? I mean, size-wise, it makes sense. I mean, you watch a tax collector, like, you know, he's able to get whatever type of tone and definition he needs for his body to play that role.
I don't know, man. So actually, for this podcast, I we'll get into this later too when we talk about the franchise larger, but
right.
I ran Days of Future Past back. I didn't finish watching it, but it had been the first time I've seen it since, like, theaters maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Jackman is a ripped dude.
Yeah.
You know? it's funny because I was watching Swordfish randomly. I saw it was on Netflix. So I queued that up, and that was pre-Wolverine fame. And he was still like a built guy, but, you know, you can see the difference from, like, filming that to filming the first X-Men when he just probably started ingesting, like, raw eggs and pulled chickens and
right
and
right.
two-a-days, you know, like,
he wasn't on that, you know, rock diet.
You know, he's one where it's like you look at, like, Batman Health and they recast that, and each time it's like, man, I don't know, like, can they move on from Christian Bale and move on from Michael Keaton? But
right.
Wolverine is definitely one where it's like, I can't imagine someone else in that. I feel like no one would care if you just put Hugh Jackman around a whole bunch of new people. But at the same time, he's getting old. It has to happen at some point.
Yeah, you can't. You can't. I mean, at this point with Logan, he killed himself. Like, his cat Logan literally killed a clone of himself. Like, you can't. There's not much else you can do with the Hugh Jackman.
Right.
I think you need to. It's one, and it's interesting. I didn't want to get into all this right now, but fuck it. Because if you're a comic book head, you know that Wolverine first got his start in a Hulk comic. It was Hulk. It was, damn, what was the name of that one? It was the Hulk Cannibal. It's like a Sasquatch, but he was in Canada. Oh my God. I apologize. I'm pulling up the cover of the artwork. Right. It's Wendigo. Wendigo. He was this cannibal ass motherfucker that only, like, instead of a werewolf, I think it was this werebeast person, and he would try and eat people or whatever. Anyway, that, like, imagine a MCU Wolverine origin film, or like a scene with whoever is Wolverine taking on a grizzled Hulk just randomly in the woods in Canada. We need that.
Would be dope. But you know, I was gonna say that I think, you know, Shia doesn't really look the part of Wolverine to me, but maybe that's what's needed, you know? We got to go. Obviously, we're not going to recreate Hugh Jackman.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. So maybe like a, because you know, going back to Hugh Jackman, he was always the, if you like a super nerd who wanted things pitch perfect, he was always too tall
for the role to begin with. Yeah, Wolverine is a very muscular dude, but also very short. You need someone who's a lot shorter than you would imagine a role like that. But I think, and it just depends, like, you don't need the X-Men to do a Wolverine film. Like, there's so many stories, so many comics of just him, like, in, like, you know, random futuristic Japanese lands being a fucking modern shogun and shit. Like, you could do a lot with the maroon and mustard outfit. Like, come on, my guy.
We're getting ahead of ourselves because I want to do a deep dive into the past franchise. Well, but I guess, you know, the peg here is New Mutants.
Yes.
So at press time, neither of us have seen it.
We tried. It's not for lack of trying.
There's no screeners out.
I sent an email. I didn't hear anything. I don't know if I did something wrong or if they just, because it doesn't even seem like it's been, well, I mean, we could get into the story. I don't want to spend all day talking about the history, but, you know, the timeline for producing the film was a lot more involved than other films. I mean,
I'll just say I won't even believe it's out until I've watched it twice.
Exactly. The first time I have been a dream. It might have been a dream.
Like, this has been one of the most delayed movies of all time. It was one of those situations where, you know, when COVID first hit too, mm-hmm. it was almost like darkly comedic the way when that fell under the delay score, because at the top of this year, we were like, oh, we're finally going to get it. Then a global pandemic hits.
We fucks up
the whole theater rollout. We were going to have Shorty on.
We were trying to get Maisie, because Maisie and Charlie Plummer and a couple of the other stars were set to be in South By. We were, one of those things we were angling was getting some time with them. And the first question would be, are you guys even surprised at this? Like, is this really coming out? Like, the biggest hurdle aside from trying to make, because if you saw the first trailer, the film looked vastly different than anything else in the X-Men cinematic, you know, universe. It was more horror. It was very dark. It was a very intense for, you know, again, even compared to Dark Phoenix or some of these other later films, it had a heavier vibe to it. But then Disney angled to buy Fox, and I think that was the biggest thing that fucked a lot of the game up, because they said that there was a point where when Disney finally took ownership and they started looking at it, they were like, we don't even think this shit is going to do well. What's the point of even putting this out? Limited box office potential was,
well,
the,
there's
quote
a couple
that was
factors
a there lot are no 100% 100%.
But yeah, you're right. They definitely, like, Maisie Williams and Charlie definitely filmed this, like, in between Game of Thrones season 5 and Stranger Things season 2 or some shit.
Again, it's one of those things where it came from the end of whatever Fox was doing as a movie house. You know, they did fail with a number of X-Men films. They also failed with the Fantastic Four franchise. That was the Josh Trank insanity, and I think...
Right, so you had Trank ruining that, and then, you know, you get Josh Boone on this, who definitely was, you know, blown up in the industry, hadn't. This is another situation where, like, he's unproven in this field, which doesn't always, like, mean much. Like, you look at a homie who directed, like, Spider-Man and stuff. Like, a lot of people come from directing stuff like Fault in Our Stars and other teen genre stuff and can translate that well.
Yeah.
Into comic book material, but... You know, it's not like a name to get people excited about.
Right, yeah. The guy, John Watts, was the guy who directed the last two Spider-Man films. And they, when I went to the set, they specifically said they'd seen his film Cop Car, which was a very small film that starred Kevin Bacon and two little kids acting crazy reckless with a cop car. But they picked up on the way that he had the kids interacting, and they wanted that vibe in a Spider-Man Homecoming teen film. So I'm going to assume someone probably saw The Fault in Our Stars. They're like, yo, he knows how to interact with teens on film. Maybe, you know, because the New Mutants are all kids in this fucked up, you know, institution situation. So maybe they saw something in that dynamic where they wanted him to be a part of that.
And don't forget, you know, the X-Men franchise started as Bryan Singer's, like, first big break.
Right.
Like, there's a dope oral history of it that ran early this summer where it's like, you know, obviously he had done Usual Suspects and stuff, but this was like his first big budget playing field.
Right. And he was, I mean, and he, it was his sandbox. He would leave and come back and kind of like, I get, because it was almost like course correction at some point. Like, you get Bryan Singer. Hopefully the ship is going in the right way at this point.
To your point, though, the franchise, that even stopped proving true. Like, I think...
Right.
Like I said, I was rewatching Days of Future Past, which I remember being, like, whatever on in theaters, and I felt like it would probably have good replay value.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really didn't dig that younger iteration. I didn't like Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique.
Right. It had issues.
Yeah, I just wasn't really feeling... Like, a lot of people like First Class. I wasn't feeling First Class. But then, you know, Days of Future Past is at least dope.
Yeah. I liked First Class. I was not mad at that. It gave, as a comic book fan, it felt like the most, like,
there's like X-Men, a scene where they espionage. Give each other code names.
There was a lot of corny shit in there. It was a lot of, and I mean, they had, Zoe Kravitz was in that, right? Like, she was in there for like a half a second. A lot of
super random shit in there.
It was very random. That was a very random film. But I liked the vibe overall.
Well, stylistically, it's great.
Right, right.
Because it's set in like the 60s, I believe. So it has like a really good aesthetic. But Singer comes back for Days of Future Past, which is cool. But then he comes back for Apocalypse, which should be like this grand thing.
Yeah.
It's trash.
They shit the entire bed. How you that fuck movie, up Apocalypse?
Yeah, especially in a world where like Marvel has everyone primed for like Thanos type bad guys. So they dropped the ball on that, and then the Dark Phoenix was even worse.
Yeah.
So once you factor in the Disney sale, right, it's in this weird position where the X-Men as we knew it isn't even working anymore.
Right, right. Well, that's the biggest thing. I mean, because it sounds silly to even think about it, but I mean, you have to note this is the last X-Men film in the Fox series, you know, and there was a point where there were edits done and reshoots. They were adding whole characters around the time that Disney saw the film and thought it wasn't working. They were apparently supposed to have gone back to more of what the original idea was, the original thought that Josh Boone had when he came up with the concept. Again, he wrote and directed the film,
and he sounded very invested in it. You know, I think the King of Film Twitter actually kept implying that he worked on it.
That's great.
Yeah, I think he did some, I don't know what he did on it, but he was saying that, you know, Josh had a very specific vision.
Facts.
That they all hoped could see the light of day.
And not a
bastardized version of it.
I feel bad. I kept saying Charlie Plummer. Charlie Heaton is the guy from Stranger Things in the film. I know I said Charlie Plummer earlier. I'm not racist. I'm just stupid sometimes. But people were so hyped because it was Maisie and Charlie, you know, two stars from two of the biggest TV shows that have been going on in the last 10 years.
And Anya Taylor-Joy.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Like, you see her in something horror-related.
Low-key, one of the best scream queens out there right now. And she ain't doing a lot of screaming. When I saw her in Split, excellent. Not so much with Glass, but I really liked her in Split. And also, there's a low-key film. Shouts out to... Collider and Complex alum Aubrey Thoroughbreds
out. I like that movie.
Thoroughbreds was really fucking good. That was a good really movie. really dark humor but a really I had to sit and take maybe like 15 minutes after and be like, damn,
that R.I.P. Anton Yelchin.
Facts. That was the last film he worked on, right?
Definitely one of them.
It was either one of the last films he worked on or one of the first ones that came out since he passed. But yeah, and there's a really amazing documentary about him and his life as well, if you didn't see it, that came out last year. Actually, shout out Justin Monroe.
We got that on the site.
Yeah, there is a piece on the site, you know, that talks to some of Anton's friends and family about his life. But anyway, I say all this to say Anya Taylor-Joy is one of the... She's set to play Magic, who is the sister of Colossus, but she has like, she's a whole like sorcerer, like the whole idea of the hell region and the essentially like hell for Marvel. she holds the keys to get there. That's part of her, you know, what happens to her as she manifests her mutant powers. So I was ready. Like, this story to me, there's a whole story in the comics where she's down there and she's under a spell and she's running fucking hell. And Colossus is like, shit, I got to get my sister out. And they like have to go into fucking limb. It's so ill.
Well, you didn't think that you were going to see that.
I went on the
big screen
again. Like, you hear me how I'm getting excited. I was talking to my
you son are very hyped.
I was telling my son the other day, because I put on Ragnarok. He never really watched Ragnarok, so I had to tell him my theory about how I thought Hela was going to be the death that Thanos is obsessed over in the comics, and we would have seen that in Infinity War. It never happened. Yeah. But, you know, I'm so into, like, these stories, you know, they resonated with me so well that I want to see it. But when I realized that this was the last film that Fox was working on, I knew. I'm like, I don't know. There's no talk of what Disney has planned next for the X-Men. Well,
that's a great segue, because we know how Disney runs Marvel, right? They run a tight ship. They totally revitalized the whole concept of comic adaptations in film and making them almost serialized. Like, someone even pointed out that I think Endgame was like the 22nd film, so it's like a legit season of television.
Facts. I never thought about it like that, but yeah, it's true.
So, you know, you get a film like New Mutants, which is coming off the end of a almost 20-year franchise that had been limping in the last few years, at most generous. And then at that, you know, it's a film that we don't even know if there's links to the OG films and New Mutants.
Right.
So I think it kind of gives, whatever they're planning for X-Men, which we'll get into, I think it gives them pause to release this and potentially confuse things
before
they can move on. But at this point, you know, the people just want to see it. It sounds interesting. And I think,
it's one of the biggest things, I think, is just because at one point it wasn't even going to hit theaters. It was supposed to hit Hulu, was one of the rumors. And a lot of that was tied into, again, Disney and the Fox buyout. They got a good chunk of Hulu. So why not, you know, just drop it on there?
This movie is not Tenet, but it would have been dope to see in theaters for sure.
Hell yeah. And that's going to be the interesting thing. Like, it's technically, aside from Tenet dropping everywhere but where we can see it, this is, for America, this is like the first real test of theaters in, you know, a pandemic situation. Because theaters are open in some spots. I don't know. Are there any around you? Do people go to theaters anymore that you know?
None are open around me whatsoever, but
people,
if
are
New
going,
Mutants
but...
is leading the charge in America, I see why Tom Cruise is in the UK pulling up on that.
No, but I think whatever happens, it's going to be an interesting bookend. I don't be surprised if, you know, after there has to be some conversation just about what the fuck is next, because you've shed whatever. With the idea of multiverses, I don't even want to get into that, because, like, there's no real knowing of, like, an existing multiverse in the MCU as of right now. So I don't know if that's in the plan. But the because they have X-Men and they have the Fantastic Four. I don't know if Marvel plans on rolling them out one at a time. Are they going to try and immediately just consume some of these things into the MC, like, what do you think makes the most sense?
All right, well, you already know the drum I've been beating. I've seen people say this after me, but don't forget I was one of the first people to say this.
Okay.
And it's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men, to me, is best suited for a TV series.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about me, 90s baby, like, growing up on that cartoon.
Right.
And being, like, a casual comic head, even I know that the way they adapted certain storylines was actually way better than most of the films did it. And I think X-Men, more so than any other really superhero property, just has, like, the deepest bench of players, like, both, like, good guys and, like, the rogues gallery. And all the different arcs, like something like, I just feel like you're never going to do something like Days of Future Past or Phoenix and Dark Phoenix justice in a 2-hour movie. Like, they have these really layered arcs that are very famous, and have so many moving pieces that I think would be way, just way better suited to a TV show.
Yeah, I think that wasn't the first. Was Dark Phoenix the first thing that was on? It was in the first season.
No. They did Dark Phoenix. See, again, they did, if I'm remembering correctly, and when Disney Plus first dropped, I watched a little bit.
A lot of people watched the cartoon, yeah.
I didn't get to the Phoenix stuff yet, but if I'm remembering it correctly, they did 5 episodes of, like, Phoenix.
Right.
And then 5 episodes of Dark Phoenix, and, you know, you mix in, like, the Hellfire Club and all that
shit. Yeah, you need that. You need that.
I remember, like, they did, like, the big 4-part apocalypse thing where he's trying to, like, destroy the world or whatever, all that shit. They did the, what's the fucking planet that what's-his-name starts? Magneto.
Was it Necrotia?
Genosha.
They
did Genosha stuff. They did the space stuff. They did all types of shit.
They hit a lot, yeah. They hit a lot.
That hardcore X-Men fans freaked out over, and I think the only things holding up a TV show, obviously, is that, you know, X-Men just feels, like, bigger than a TV show, I guess. And then, you know, budget, obviously. But I think these days when we're looking at shows like Game of Thrones, just going back to Maisie Williams, or even Mandalorian on keeping in the Disney Plus family.
Yeah.
Like, they're willing to spend movie money on TV shows anyway.
Right. And you could probably, I mean, Jon Favreau's show running Mandalorian, you could get an impact player to have them really mold the show if they really wanted. I'm torn, because I'm like, I've seen the Phoenix story twice on film.
Bro, that last one was the worst. We have an X-Men ranking up on the site. That's, like, you know, more or less my personal ranking, but.
The first time they tried it was bad. I thought the second time would have been better. And for they got some parts of it right, but the rest is just like, now what? What are we doing? But I say that, but I know.
It was worse. They somehow made a worse film than Brett Ratner, who clearly didn't understand anything from a comic nerd perspective. And somehow, even with them trying to get things right, they made, like, the dullest story imaginable.
Stupid. I remember. I wrote about when Apocalypse happened, and I was like, hey, don't be surprised if you get that fucking Phoenix film. This was when the film, like, the weekend after Apocalypse came out, I wrote this thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it kind of ends with her with hinting at that.
And people were pissed. People were like, no, they didn't shown up. But if you, like, again, Disney, whoever, I don't say you need to hire me, but here's an idea. Season one of a show, you learn Jean Grey, you learn Phoenix. You don't even get Hellfire Club season one. At the end of that cliffhanger is, like, her getting the invite.
See, dude, it writes itself.
It's
much.
Right there. And then season two.
You could do a whole season one that's not even with any kind of Phoenix shit.
Right.
The movies never even got to Mr. Sinister. Who was always one of my favorite.
They were building.
Nate and Z-Money have long-standing beef of one of them robbing the other of a Mr. Sinister action figure in, like, kindergarten. That's how deep it goes.
No, that's crazy. I think they were trying to do Sinister. I mean, one of these days we could talk a whole podcast on the ways they hinted,
like,
at
the little
Sinister.
Easter eggs.
It's in every film. I think
Apocalypse had, like, had his government name in there somewhere or something, right?
Was Apocalypse the one where there was a Wolverine sighting? Where, like, he ran out at the facility, they had, like, the DNA you saw of, like, a lot of mutants from the comics. You'd seen they had one with his, but I think you saw that. And then that DNA is what was used in the Logan film to create all the kids who were, like, the clones of the different mutants
The cartoon got into all of the, like, Mystique shit that the movies didn't even get into, and, like, Nightcrawler and all of that, like, Rogue. You could have so much more fun, X-Men.
You could do 10 seasons of a show, and you could have season one be it could be a Jean Grey show. Meet Jean Grey, season two, the Phoenix powers arise in her while she's also, you know, getting these hints from the Hellfire Club. You can go to the Hellfire Club in season three and make that be the real Phoenix shift into Dark Phoenix turning.
Are we pitching here?
I'm saying, like,
Courtney, if you're listening,
I'm just saying that's at least three seasons of a show, and then it's,
and that's to be fair, that's three seasons of a potential show. There are three whole different arcs that you could play around with if you wanted to.
Right. You could come on.
Because, like, you know, that would be their third time trying to do Phoenix, right? We got to do Apocalypse, right?
Yes. Yeah. They have to. And doing Apocalypse, right, can be a lot of fun because you got to go back because he's ancient. So you can go to Africa. You can go through so many different, just showing an episode of Apocalypse's Reign of Terror.
There was a mid TV show that came after the X-Men of my generation that I remember kind of just tapping in on. It was like closer to when I was a little bit older, probably like early teens. They did they made the cast younger. It was a Saturday morning cartoon on like WB or whatever, but it definitely wasn't as good. But they did some fun things with plot, and they made like Apocalypse like almost like a season long, like like the Mummy type shit. Like they were trying to like niggas were trying to like resurrect him or something. Like there's just so much fun you could have, and we're in a time like, you know, Jennifer Aniston came back to TV on a fucking network that nobody even watches yet. Like
facts. And Elizabeth Shue's is on Amazon. Like there's some legends, like, out there.
We're so far removed from people being too good for TV.
Right.
You can, and like we said, budget. There's definitely room to get the money you need and the talent you need to make X-Men pop on a TV series.
I think the only other thing, I mean, if Disney doesn't want to go TV again, and I'm free pitches, unless you want to pay me. One of my favorite comic books I had, I was talking to about it with a homie the other day. There was the collection of the X-Men versus Fantastic Four. It, because not only did you had young Rogue, I forget who she touched, but she touched somebody, and this is when she was able to fly and do all this other crazy shit. It was, they were in a mysterious land, the Fantastic Four was in a mysterious land, and come to find out, it's Dr. Doom trying to get them to kill each other. It's such an amazing story.
Bro, you could do that. Well, I don't really care about the Fantastic Four, so we can't do a whole episode, but they are equally people who are begging to be done right, you know, like, facts. The first Dr. Doom was the nigga from Charmed, and then I couldn't even tell you about Josh Trank's Dr. Doom because I fell asleep on that clean.
Yeah, I never got through that film either. I can't do it. Sorry.
They're both properties who are begging to be done right. So I think, you know, just in the interest of moving on, I think, so we agreed that Disney probably isn't going to do TV for characters this big. But I think the reason that a lot of people are have pause about Disney taking over X-Men is because even though the franchise ended on a really sour note, there's still room for them to have shit like a New Mutants, like something that was a stylistic departure. When people look at, you know, it was impressive at first the way Disney ran Marvel and the MCU. And now I think years removed from that, people are just kind of a little tired of it and a little, you know, not so impressed with the way that it's kind of just become like a factory. Like I think there are really only like, let's say, five, at least off top, Marvel movies that you can name that have like their own distinct aesthetic.
Facts.
Like most of them are all good. They're all fun, but it's like when you think about like movies that have like flair, that's different from like a, you know, just a factory rollout, jokes, wit, explosion, things gonna destroy the world. You know, you think of like Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Ragnarok.
Well, again, this was the conversation. I'm sorry to cut you off. This was a conversation I was having with my son yesterday about Ragnarok. Was because when you really think about the film only does a couple of things. It gets Hulk back, and it sets up Infinity War. There's nothing else that's really of note in Ragnarok. But the fact that you get Thor versus Hulk. You get fucking Tessa Thompson being amazing. Like the scene where she has the shit that comes down and she like shoot. It looks like the fucking robot from the RoboCop films, Ed 209. Shout out to old niggas that know what the fuck I'm talking about. And if you saw that Mads Mikkelsen film that was on Netflix in 2019, I think they stole that same fucking hit where he had the shit on his hands and he was able to guide the fucking turret guns or whatever and kill all the motherfuckers who's trying to get them.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Polar. It came out in 2019. That was a film that was based off of a graphic novel as well. I don't know if they're making a second one, but yeah, he was like this old grizzled fucking killer dude, and he somehow he had all this fucking artillery and found a way to control the shit with his hands. But it was a scene in Ragnarok. It's clear as day because I just saw it. Where she, you know, did the same shit, but she had like crazy outer space tech. But again, like, for as stylistically amazing as people remember, that's what people remember Ragnarok for. When you actually sit and think, like, what does that movie mean for the bigger universe? It's legit like two things.
Yeah, so I think people look at how they've run the MCU and how it can kind of be fun but still a little flavorless.
Right.
And think that, you know, you're not like, I don't love First Class, but a lot of people love First Class. And I'll admit, First Class is, again, like we said, it's like very stylish.
Word.
Like, would you get a movie that stylish? Would you get a movie that as adventurous as we at least hope New Mutants will be? You know, yeah. I don't know.
It's just on depending on how they attack it. One thing to note is that New Mutants is coming out as a 20th century film. It's not a Disney film or anything like that. It's not listed as a Marvel Studios film at all. So when I got the first press release about New Mutants and I saw that, I wondered immediately what they're going to do with Deadpool, because Deadpool was a Fox film. There's no longer 20th Century Fox because of the merger. Fox took the name, so it's just 20th Century. Are they going to make like PG-13/R-rated films that may be like MCU adjacent, but, you know, put it out? Because Marvel has the Marvel Max, or they had the Marvel Max series. That was where people first saw Jessica Jones. Her story was first told in that. It's more of like an adult. They curse, you know, there's more like sexual, you know. It's a lot more adult themes in a comic book that you wouldn't want to put that on the stands for kids to see. They could use a 20th century or a different, you know, subdivision film company to put out some films that may not be the ultra glossy MCU, but still have ties to it if they wanted to. But, you know, again, it's hard. We can't prognosticate any of this because they're not saying shit. It all sounds great.
At the very least, people are running wild with Dreamcasting. So we had the Shia rumor pop up literally out of nowhere. It's probably fake, but
yeah.
I also saw people say that Michaela Cole would be a dope Storm, which would be dope to see.
Yeah, that makes sense. That means, you know, Michaela Cole would be great. Kiki Lane from The Old Guard, when I spoke with her, she's been really adamant, and I think her hope, similar to a Black Panther, is not just that, you know, you get the right person to play Storm, but you have, you know, the right woman really telling that African tale. Because, I mean, it's a Storm film could be interesting, again, if you really go into the backstory of her being a thief in Africa and all this stuff. You know, it's a really powerful film.
TV show.
Yeah, or TV 20 show. 20
characters that have 20 fucking backstories.
Big fact. They might as well. And I don't want to say pad Disney Plus, because you don't need that, but stacking a number of... making X-Men a series-based franchise and just seeing Storm and Jean Grey and Logan or whatever the fuck, that's huge.
When there's rumors of Kit Harington joining the MCU, people wondered about Wolverine casting. Turned out, of course, that he's joining the Eternals, but I don't know. He maybe has the look. I don't know if he has the gravitas.
No, Jon Snow is not a Wolverine. I'm sorry.
But, you know, that casting, I can't even, like, is it another unknown? Like, that's a really big piece.
I would hope they go with an unknown, because, I mean, like, I don't want to say Tom Holland was an unknown, but I think Tom Holland is a good example of, like, the type of casting they should be doing for these films, you know?
Yeah.
Someone that a lot of people haven't seen and is not just very good, but is also agile and, you know, like, you know, they're really active. I think you need, if you can find people who can act but aren't really known, I think that I would prefer that than trying to just get the biggest fucking names who haven't been these characters in at least, you know, 20 years or whatever the fuck.
All right, so I guess let's close it out then, kind of, arcing out what it would look like. So you said they could introduce Wolverine in a Hulk movie, but what is the ideal way to integrate the X-Men into the MCU? Like, what do we want to see? Do we want to see a standalone film with the group? Do we want to see one of the characters come in in one of the established characters movies, and then you spin out of that. Like, what is the most sensible way, factoring in how they have to tell these stories for mainstream audiences, not just niggas like me and you that know the ins and outs?
I just came up with it. This is the scene. Remember, did you watch when Jamie Foxx was on Hot 97 talking about the opening to the Tyson movie?
No.
All right, he paints an amazing picture about, you know, him as Tyson, a young Tyson, da da da, and he gets knocked out, and it's kind of like blah 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 blah, and then like that's where the story, you know, begins, from, you know, him in the middle of a fight, da 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 da. Scene.
Standard biopic shit. Go.
We're in the jungle. It starts in the jungle. Hulk's running, you know, crushing shit. You know, you can tell he's intense. He's something's behind him. He doesn't know what's going on. He's looking in the trees. You see shit darting in the trees behind him before da 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 da. Come to find out, it's a rabid Wolverine. Wolverine claws out. They going in, you know, 5 minutes. It could be on par with Hulk and Thanos at the beginning of Infinity War. Not a total washing, but like 5 minutes in, crazy shit happens.
Good sound effects.
Facts. I'm trying. Again, we pitching. Hulk gets the better of Wolverine. He hits him with a rocket enough to knock Wolverine out, so then Hulk can say, fuck this, jump off. And this Hulk is Mark Ruffalo. It's his only appearance in the film. What happens is you hear a fucking, what's the plane that they got?
The X-Jet?
Yeah, whatever. I forget. There's a specific name, but yeah, their jet lands. Charles, the fucking door opens up. Charles comes out in the fucking hover wheelchair, and is like, all right, grab him, da 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 da, put him on the shit. They fly off, boom, X-Men. Because that's what Charles does. He follows the mutants around the world. He grabs them when, you know, he couldn't have grabbed Wolverine because Wolverine was already too fucking old. Wolverine, like, 300 years old at this point, based off of, you know, his healing factor. But You get the tie-in between the MCU. So we know if Hulk exists here, they exist where Iron Man and Spider-Man, all the motherfuckers, was. But we're not even worrying about them right now, because we didn't realize that this covert mutant group is out here, you know, trying to amass a squad so they can take care of the problems that we ain't even seen. Man, come on. Come on.
There you go.
Come on. That could be a movie or a series. Let's go.
I mean, so a couple, just one note I forgot to bring up here.
Uh-huh.
Two notes.
Okay.
One is, you know, we were talking about stylistic departures and different flair.
Mm-hmm.
The Wolverine. Everyone loves Logan.
Yes.
Logan is cool.
Present company.
It's R-rated.
Yeah.
Whatever. The Wolverine is arguably the best Wolverine film and one of the probably the most underrated.
I really like The Wolverine. I don't go back to it a lot, but I really like that film.
The Wolverine is really dope.
I didn't like the ending is what it is. I wasn't a big fan of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but the vibes.
Yeah.
The vibes henceforth.
Right.
And then, you know, I was talking about an X series, and we were talking about what talent could run that.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently trying to get him out of here, and it's up for debate if he deserves it or if there's just bad blood. If Joss Whedon survives being canceled...
Mm.
He wrote a very good, one of the few X-Men comics that I did read. He wrote a really fun run of Astonishing.
Oh, okay.
And he's always circled the series because I think that he wrote a first pass for the first X-Men film, which also, you know, when you wrote that scene out of Professor X, that reminded me. I don't know if you read that oral history, but Michael Jackson wanted to play Professor X, which is just... Like, legit, he came into the office unannounced and auditioned.
Michael Jackson, the man known for dancing, is down to play the guy who can't walk.
Can you imagine, like, a bald Michael Jackson?
No, this is not...
Can you imagine, like, Michael Jackson on Cerebro?
Like, Michael Jackson trying to be authoritative to Wolverine? Come on.
Yeah, man. Can you imagine Michael Jackson putting some bass in his voice?
No,
anyway. Anyway, Whedon actually wrote he took a first pass at a script for that. The production for that film was a mess, and the line where Wolverine called Cyclops a dick.
Mm-hmm. That was his line.
The only Joss Whedon line that made it, but if you watch a lot of his shows, they're all about, they have like all X-Men vibes, I think. You know, it was cool to see him kind of apply that to Avengers, but I think X-Men is the Marvel property he's always been best suited to really fuck with. It, now, you know, my man Ray Fisher is saying that Joss Whedon needs to be out of here. So apparently he's under investigation right now.
Yeah, we'll see. They're checking to see what his card is looking like right now. We'll let that slide. I think that's probably going to wrap it up for this week. A lot of X talk. If you're an X-Men fan, let us know at Complex Pop or Twitter or Instagram. What are your thoughts about the future of the X-Men franchise? Do you see movies? Are you what type of shows would you like to see on Disney Plus from X-Men? Let us know. Watch Less drops every Wednesday, 6 a.m. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah, that's it. Fuck it. We gotta go handle some work for the summer, man. It's your boy Cal advising as always. Wear a mask. Stay 6 feet away from whoever is around you. Keep that social distance. Because I want to go to the theaters at some point. It might not be 2020, but at some point I want to go back. So y'all gotta fix this shit.
I'm going to see Tenet.
Here he go. Tom Cruise, holler at Fraser.
I'm going on my Tom Cruise.
Pick him up in the copter. You know, climb out real quick. Tune in and watch less. Peace. Watch Less is hosted by Fraser Tharp and myself, Cal. Our producer is Taliba Newman. Our associate producer and sound engineer is Jasmine Plata. Our editor is Tyler Boltheis. Our production manager is Chancel Correa. Our talent booker is Anthony Allred. Our junior booker is Austin Bailey. Our director of talent relations is Kristen Price Harrell. Senior director of operations is Jen Stewart. Watch Less is a part of the Complex Podcast Network.